on Christmas Day, he'd go down there and he'd take him a tub and he'd bust the ice off that water hole and he'd bring it to the house and he'd get his ice cream freezer and sit in front of the fireplace, old log fireplace, and he'd make a freezer ice cream on Christmas Day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden, Alabama podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Dylan Hayes.
Sue Warden.
This is a special one for me today. So this is my grandmother, and this is my great uncle. So it's her brother. As he mentioned, his name's Dylan. And we've been trying to get these cats on here for a minute.
I'm outnumbered.
We're not dealing with them Thomases today. Nothing to do with that. But so this is going to be, if everything works out as we planned, this will be our Christmas episode. And what I would really like to do is, along with bringing joy, I want to capture today how much Christmas has changed over the years. So you got to think, this is the stories you're fixing to hear are Christmases from the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s. And, you know, as time goes slowly by, we don't notice changes. But then we fast forward and we get 80 years down the road and we're like, whoa, things has changed a lot. So we have, the way the show's going to go today is they have put together some of their favorite Christmas memories to share with us, the stories. And then after that, I've talked them into sharing some of their favorite childhood stories. Maybe not to do with Christmas, but they're so good. And I just long to hear them. So without further ado, Uncle Dylan's going to kick us off. He's got his first Christmas story for us.
When we was just kids, we had a big old walnut tree at the end of the house, and all the walnuts fell off. My dad took some tin and spread it out and made a little frame around it, and we'd have to pick up them walnuts and pile them in that bin and stomp the hulls off of them. Well, at the end of the season before Christmas, Dad would take all of those walnuts to town, and he'd swap them for pecans, English walnuts, and cashew nuts. And he'd buy a case of oranges, case of apples, case of tangerines,
grapes,
and a stalk of bananas every Christmas. And when we got through with those oranges and grapes and stuff, and that was it to the next year. Now, we had apple trees that we could get June apple into early season. And my uncle had the apple orchard. We'd get apples from that. But anyway, that was our Christmas to start with. But when I was small, only really two toys that I can really call that I got for Christmas. One year I got a little tricycle, wind-up tricycle with this little metal man on it. And when you wind him up, you turn him loose, and here you go across the floor, just a little old feet just to go in it on them pedals. But that was one of my Christmases that I really remember, and I was small. And that's all we got for Christmas, or I got. Then another year, I got a basketball. And that's 2 years that I really remember of getting any toys whatsoever. Now, we probably got clothes that I can't recall, but we went over to my grandmother's and granddaddy's loves usually every Christmas, and we usually go over and stay all night before Christmas. So, really, Christmas has changed. What does kids get nowadays, and what can they remember getting? They get so much they can't think of it.
Can't think of it.
So, really, our Christmas was really short because we didn't have a lot of money to buy nothing with. So,
now I got a question before Mama tells hers. You said that Papa Hayes, which would be my great grandfather, right, your daddy, he took them to town. What right. town did he take them to?
Birmingham.
Took them to Birmingham. And now that wasn't, what year are we in right now, you think, roughly?
Roughly, that was 45, 46 in that neighborhood.
Now, how did he get to Birmingham?
He had his truck.
Well, he bought an old truck from Mr. Alfred Marks, and it was a 46 model.
That's brand new.
But anyway, after it was Well, the truck was kind of old. I remember when it was 46 when he bought it anyway. But later on, my granddaddy and my dad built an old stake body for it because the bed was rusted out. But then later on, my dad bought a brand new Ford 9 Chevrolet pickup. It had the windows in the corner of the cab. And it was red in the gas heater. And it had to light the heater because it's gas. It didn't have a water heater.
You had to light the heater in the truck.
Right. And it nearly make you sick every time.
I can imagine carbon monoxide poison was.
That's real.
I'd get sick in
carbon
that thing.
Dioxide poison.
What kind of fuel did it use to burn the heater in the truck? That's foreign to
gasoline.
Me.
Really,
I don't remember, but it was gas. That's all I can remember because I was small.
I guess it's better than being cold. That is dangerous, buddy.
I got questions about the stomping walnuts.
Okay.
Now, if y'all's mama was anything like my mama, she couldn't stand Walmart feet. And if you stomp black walnuts, you had to have Walmart feet.
Well, we had the old Brogan shoes on to stomp the whole thing.
Oh, so you weren't doing it barefooted.
No.
But you couldn't stomp, you had to hold them with your hands.
Yeah, you had Walmart hands then.
Yes, you did.
But after you got them stomped with a hole to dry, and you just peel that off and that walnut had to be clean before you put it in a burlap sack and dad sack them all up and take them to town.
When we were kids, my mama, we wouldn't wear tennis shoes. So we was always barefooted. My mama would Clorox our feet with a toothbrush, and that's how bad they would be.
Right.
So I imagine y'all had to do something similar to get that black walnut off your hands.
I tell you what, back when I was a kid, I had a ringworm on my hand. My dad knocked a black walnut off, and he cut it in two with his knife, and he rubbed that black walnut on my hand. It turned it green, and the ringworm went away.
Ringworm decided he didn't want to hang around that black walnut.
<That's right. laughs>
It went away. Right. That cured it.
Right.
Well, there's a little something.
There's a nugget for you.
Y'all was free. Y'all can have that and take that with you in case any of you's got the ringworm.
Survival advice right there.
Right, but go ahead and tell what you got on Christmas.
Well, when I got my Christmas, I got a doll. And then the next time I got the second Christmas I can remember is I got a doll bed. And then I had to go over to my grandmother's and stay all night. So she gave me a doll to put in my doll bed for Christmas that night. But I was going to stay up and catch Santa Claus going under the Christmas tree. But Daddy had built this big old fire in our big old fireplace. And I got so warm till I went to sleep and I missed Santa Claus and I woke up the next morning and I had to go to the Christmas tree to find my little doll bed.
Where were you at did they move you to the bed?
Daddy probably picked me up and put me in the bed because I was going to find out what Santa Claus looked like and what he put on that tree.
And you didn't make it?
I did not make it.
Well, you know, if you stay awake, Santa Claus ain't coming anyway.
That's what I hear.
Well, that's what my daddy would tell me.
But I'm going to stay awake anyway.
Yes, I was going to. But I got so warm till I just dropped off to sleep.
I tried it once.
There wasn't much presents to be got when we was a kid.
No.
It was very slim. You might got some kind of clothes that we don't remember, but for toys, they come very few.
You're telling me one a year. I mean, that's what y'all both described.
Right. One a year.
As well as shoes, one pair a year.
Right. And mother would go down there to Henry Standridge, Helmer and Henry. They had the old store down there at the railroad. And that's where mother bought her Christmas. She'd go back there and Mr. Henry would try to put it in a bag and keep me from seeing it. But, you know, I did see the basketball go in the sack, you know, and I knowed what I was getting for Christmas. But, you know, that's one of
the... And one time... Was at the store, and Mr. Henry had got these little black and white shoes. And I wanted them so bad because they was called saddle officers. And Mom said, you cannot have those. And I cried, and Daddy said, well, she can have them. So he went and bought me them little black and white shoes anyway. And I was the proudest thing you ever saw.
Daddy
them little
said
black
she
white
can shoes. Have them. Yeah, yeah.
But usually at Christmas, my dad would go to the creek down there below the house. It's off the hill. There's a big water hole that we'd, in the summertime, our well would go dry. Well, he'd tote water to the chickens and the hogs and everything else. But on Christmas Day, he'd go down there and he'd take him a tub. And he'd bust the ice off that water hole. And he'd bring it to the house and he'd get his ice cream freezer and sit in front of the fireplace, old log fireplace, and he'd make a freezer ice cream on Christmas Day. When we was at home.
And he loved ice cream, and so did Dylan and I.
So he was using what God was giving him, which was ice, because it was cold.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
right.
Put a little salt in there and go ahead and make you some ice cream.
Right. He had that old
crank. And we'd eat a whole gallon.
He'd crank that
old
ice.
I bet you would.
He'd sit like in front of getting it all the time.
Sit in front of the fire and crank that old hand freezer. Till he made the ice cream.
I eat a whole gallon and I can go down to the Dollar General and get it.
Now, was it vanilla? Or?
Yes, yeah. It was vanilla ice cream.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Papa Hazy.
Because we had the cow, we had the milk, we had the chickens, we had the eggs.
Had everything you need, and God so would forgive you a little ice.
If we was at home, not being over, Mama Love and Dad Loves, he would go down there and get that ice off the branch and bring it to the house in a tub, wash tub, and he'd make his ice cream in front of the fire.
That's good stuff.
And on the Christmas, we'd go spend the weekend then with Mama Love and Daddy Love, and all the family would come in, and they'd all bring lunch and cakes and stuff. And if there was 15 cakes there, my dad had a piece of every cake. Yes. He could eat more than anybody I've ever saw in my life and not gain an ounce.
It was because he worked his backside off all day. He's right. To enjoy that cake.
Yes. Right.
Let me back up a little bit to where you were talking about the fruit. Your daddy was trading
the walnuts
for the fruit and pecans and stuff. If you're anywhere from the South, and this may be all across the U.S., but I know it's prevalent in the South. When Christmas time's coming around, most of the churches give out fruit baskets to the elderly. Is that where that was rooted from, because it was available and it was just not something that was – when did they start doing fruit baskets, I guess, for Christmas?
I have no idea.
I don't know. But he did that every
Christmas.
Year.
The only reason I say that is because most of your fruit baskets, they've got oranges, mm-hmm. right. apples, bananas, mm-hmm. some grapes.
Right.
And every now and then you'll get some walnuts or some pecans in there, they say, in South Georgia.
Right.
So I didn't know if it was just some tradition that –
It's
carried over from
it's just something he did every Christmas, because that's the only time we got that. We'd get our apples off of apple trees in the orchard, but the other stuff, that was one time a year.
What do you think a kid would do now if got up Christmas morning and there's just a basket of fruit sitting there and said, Merry Christmas? It'd be different, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
It'd be different. They would not be happy.
We also raised chickens and had eggs, and he'd carry eggs too to the market and buy stuff with it.
And when the old hens had quit laying, when they'd go to molting, he used the red island red. He didn't use the white chicken, he used the red ones, and they had the brown eggs. They'd buy them hens up because they're big and fat, and they could sell them real quick. You know, still a little skinny
chicken,
white chicken.
Now the chickens, you said they go to molting. They better be laying eggs, or they turn into Christmas dinner.
Right? Yes. Exactly. When they start molting, they quit laying eggs.
We had one molt the other day, buddy, and Bethany thought something had got in the pen and tried to eat her alive.
Oh,
they look rough when they molt, boy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they lose all them feathers, and they look like something's eat them up. You know.
Well, Dad really throw the feed to them, fatten them up all he could, and crate them up, and to town they'd go.
Yeah, Dylan and I'd have, that was what we had to do of an evening. We had to gather the eggs, and a lot of times we'd go together and pick up the eggs, and there'd be big old chicken snakes in there, and we'd start screaming, and our mother come running with a hoe and kill the snakes, and we'd get, and then we'd have to go to the bottom of the hill to the water hole and tote water up and fill up their troughs for the next day.
Right.
It always cracked me up when my grandmother had chickens too, and I was a kid, I never figured out what in the world are the chicken snakes just hanging out in there for. Well, the reason was because they'd ate so many eggs, right, they couldn't get back out the chicken wire.
Right.
So they had to wait till they processed the eggs to get out of the chicken wire.
Right.
So you find them in there. Just
is that where you got your talent for killing snakes?
Yes.
I'm here to tell you, y'all are blessed. This lady right here is the finest snake killer I've ever did see.
She can do it.
I mean, she can do it. If she ever gets mad at you and she grabs a hoe,
you better go on
because I've seen a lot of snakes lose their lives that way.
My wife, Barbara, she'd always scream and I'd have to run and kill the snake because she's screaming, go the other way, wide open.
Why, fast as she could go.
Right, right.
Now, you mentioned family. I want to spend just a minute here because you said when y'all got together for Christmas with your family, did everybody come?
Yes. We'd go to my grandmother's and we'd usually stay, we'd walk from our house to the river. And if it rained, Daddy had a boat and he had it locked to a tree where nobody'd steal it. So we'd get in that boat, we'd go across the river and he'd lock it up over on the other side of the river to a tree. And we'd go up to Mama Love's and we would have lunch. They'd usually bring lunch with them because they were all married by then. And we'd sit down and have our meals.
Me and Sue was the oldest grandkids. So it was on up in the years before the others started having children. Mm-hmm. So we'd go over there and stay all night and we'd be the only grandchildren over there for several years.
Yeah.
So.
Y'all had it made, didn't you?
Right. We had it made, but when she's talking about Dad take us across the river in a boat, see, the bridge burnt. And then after that burnt, right below it, they started the Vaughn Bridge. And the Vaughn Bridge stayed there till several years ago till they built the tall Blaylock Bridge. There've been three bridges there in my lifetime, but the first one did burn. That's the reason we'd have to cross the river in the boat.
Now, was it in the same spot there?
Yes.
Well, you can see where the Vaughn Bridge is. If you look to the left, you can see some of the old pillars and some of the rods still coming out of the water. But then, like I say, I don't know what kind of sign the Vaughn Bridge left when they tore it down. But then, you know, the Blaylock Bridge is way up high now. It never did get over because I can remember when we was kids, Dad would go down there with a truck and the water would be running across the bridge in the middle and be sloshing up through the cracks of the planks. Mother would not ride across the bridge in the truck. She'd get us kids out. Daddy'd go across and park the truck and walk back and lead us across with Mother.
With the water
running across the bridge.
And they would be planks out of the bridge and the water would be jumping up through it too.
So you had to jump over those.
Daddy would carry us around that and he had big long legs and he could step across it and he walked.
Then
back to the truck.
And for folks that don't know, Blount County is known for their covered bridge, their wooden bridges.
Right.
And so there used to be numerous wooden bridges around here. Mm-hmm. If you're going anywhere through Blount County, you've got to cross the Locust Fork or the Mulberry, one of the two. So there was plenty of wooden bridges. So they had to cross those wooden bridges. And I could see why your mama wouldn't want to cross in the truck.
But no doubt.
She had a fit.
But later on in the years, they put runners across the bridge that you drive on those runners, you know, instead of just the raw
planks.
Right. But
there's still holes come up in there where you still get over the bridge.
Right,
the water
it still board. Run over. Mm-hmm. And
because it was real low.
Yeah.
You would never think that the river could get high enough to get up to the Blaylock Bridge now, because it's really tall.
Oh, man. No, I don't think so.
People from out around. I mean, it is way above the river.
I've heard tell, and my uncle seen it. He put a tape measure, and it was 3 foot below it.
That's exactly what I was. That's probably the same year, because Papa Hayes took Mama and I down there. He said, I've never seen it this tall. And we went down there and walked across the bridge, and it was just right below the, I mean,
that's probably 40 feet.
It was unbelievable to see that much water rolling through that right. holler right there. The power of water is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show. Well, Uncle Dylan, tell me another one of those Christmas stories.
Okay. When we was kids, Mother'd have to have a Christmas tree. Always it'd have to be just as thick as it could be, because she wouldn't have them little thin ones that you could see through. So we'd walk the woods over, because when you got in the heavy woods, the thinner the tree would get it. If you got out in the edge of the field or something other and found a Christmas tree, it'd usually be thicker. It, you know. Well, we'd have to get a Christmas tree, carry it to the house, and Mother decorate. Daddy'd fix a little frame on it, and he'd put it up, and Mother decorate it. And they didn't have nothing but some kind of little glass balls to put on it, but there wasn't no electricity.
Roping.
And they'd have this old rope decoration to put on the tree. That's about the only decoration you had. Sometimes they did come out with some mistletoe. I mean, some it's just aluminum strings. It's called, I don't know. Yeah, tinsel. But anyway.
Icicles.
Dad'd have to go to the woods, take the .22 rifle, and he'd have to shoot mistletoe out of the tree for Mother to decorate over the mantle, fireplace mantle, and over the windows and a door frame. And that was our decoration for Christmas.
So you stop and get you a kiss every now and then.
Huh? Well, yeah, sometime if you, that, you know.
Timing was good.
Yeah. Right. But back in their days, Mother and Dad, you didn't get a lot of kisses. They'd hug you and tell you they loved you and stuff like that, but you did not get a lot of kisses.
A lot of kisses.
No.
Well, that's the mistletoe, guys. That was the only chance you could get kisses, son.
Fruit.
Fruit mistletoe.
It's seasonal.
It's seasonal. Hey, but I was thinking, you said shooting them that mistletoe with a .22 rifle, you got to be a pretty good shot with a .22 to knock
out. He'd shoot it out.
I've shot it out with a shotgun, but I ain't ever shot it out with a .22.
He's got enough bullets.
I tell you what, not changing the subject, but my granddaddy's on Sunday evening. My uncle had a BB gun over it. I ended up with it, don't down, but they'd take .22 and that BB gun, and they'd shoot bumblebees out of the air off of the front porch in the summertime.
That's pretty impressive.
They'd shoot bumblebees with that BB gun and that .22 rifles.
Which we talked a little bit about this the other day. 22s used to be a cent. A penny a piece. Nowadays, you just might as well just go.
Well, you can buy a box back in the day for 59 cents. But then on down the years, we got a little older after we got through all of our Christmases and stuff. In the summertime, in the wintertime, we'd still be cold. There was a pond in front of our house. And it'd fill up with water, and it'd be about foot and a half deep at the most, but it's a pretty good area. But that thing would fill up with water and freeze over. And oil come in oil cans back in that day and time. Well, we'd take them old oil cans and we'd stomp them on the heel of our shoes. And we'd get out there on that ice and run and skate on that ice. And that was our entertainment.
Ice skate.
We hit the ground a lot.
Anyway, on down through the years, the road machine, they made that road a little wider, and Mr. Oscar Reed was driving the road patrol. Well, Dad got him to take that bank down just a little bit, and it, from then on, the pond drained down, and they wouldn't water stand
there. Oh, man, they took all your ice skating away.
They took all that away from us, and that's going out to your mom's, that low place right there.
Yeah, no, that used to be the pond.
That used to be the pond.
Well, it stays wet all the time all right the time. There anyway. That don't surprise me a bit.
Right, but that was the pond that we skated on.
I bet y'all were smooth disappointed when that happened.
Oh, yes.
Because wintertime, when it's cold like that, there ain't a whole lot of fun to be had.
No, well, no, but they would take him old oil cans and stomp them on the heel of her shoes, and as we'd skate all over that pond, sometimes he'd get kind of thin, we'd go under, and our feet get wet, and mother be raising cane because we got our feet wet. And
going to catch pneumonia.
That's right.
And then we rigged us up a seesaw, and it was in old hog wire fastened to trees, and Dad had cut a log around it like a power pole. So we had us a seesaw. Well, Dylan or I was on one end, and our first cousin was on the other, and we was seesawing, and she fell off and broke her arm.
Oh, no.
So I said, well, I have to go tell my aunt that she's got a broke arm. So I run to tell her, and when I told her, she said, go tell your daddy, get the truck, and let's go to the doctor. We had to see that she got to the doctor, and me and Dylan didn't seesaw no more. Daddy said, that was too dangerous to be seesawing. So then we'd go to the pine thicket, and we'd ride pine saplings down into a holler over behind the house.
We'd climb in pine trees and just bend them out and ride them out to
ride them down.
And most of the time, we'd ride one to the other one to catch another tree and just keep riding them down until we got up plumb out of the pine thicket to the edge of pine
thicket. We had to find our play purges. We didn't have bicycles to ride.
What did you call that riding the pines? What did you call? Was it a specific name for that?
Let's just go pine.
Riding pines.
Right, Let's go ride pine trees.
Well, I've heard others call it skinning cats. Why would did
we
y'all
didn't
ever
try
call
to skin no cats? We just skinning across them pine trees down in the holler.
So what would you do? You would just reach up there and bend
get a
it.
Hold of it, and you can ride it down. You
bend
that tree,
and climb it up, and it'd start bending out.
Climb it all the way up to the top.
And it'd bend it over, and it'd bend over to another, and you just grab it and just keep riding them to stay up as long as you could.
And whoever could go the furthest, that was the winner.
Yeah. And then on further down the road, first cousin lived over in an old log house out from us. My dad's sister and her husband, and she had a son named Leo Neely. And he's over there one day, and he said, Dylan said, what do you want me to make you, a wagon or a scooter? And I said, I always wanted a wagon. I ain't never had a wagon in my life. He said, okay, I'll fix you up. So about a couple of weeks, here he come with my wagon. We was out there in front of the house and in the field out there in front of the house. And he brought my wagon to me. Well, it's an old steel bed wagon, just like today. And the framework was all there, just like you'd bought. But it didn't have nothing but wooden wheels. He had to go to the woods and cut a tree down, and he took them that tree, and he cut it about an inch and a half thick, and he sawed four wheels out. And I don't know how he shaped them up to where they'd be practically solid round, but he did. But he drilled a hole in them, and he put them on that axle, and that was my wheels on the wagon. And I had that wagon for years till them wheels rotted off. I don't know what kind of wood it was, but undoubtedly, he soaked them some kind of oil or something or other because they lasted a long time, and that was my first wagon.
And that was one you could pull around.
Right, and I was at least 10 or 11 years old when I got that wagon.
You was high class.
Oh, yes, I was. And I thought I was in top of the line at that time myself. But I wanted that wagon bad instead of an old scooter that you just take one foot and put on and take off. But I was proud of that wagon. I'd use that wagon for everything.
My son has recently learned how to climb trees. He was talking about climbing trees earlier. And he is wide open on tree climbing. And every time he finds a tree that he thinks he can climb, that's what he comes hollering, "Daddy, I found a tree climb. I found a climbing tree." He is eat up with climbing trees. But I remember that as a kid. That was always, and I think it's because it was a completely different perspective.
Right.
You know, I'm down here, but if I get up in the tree, I can really see from up there, buddy.
Now, after you got old enough to drive, you had a secret, Mama, that you kept for a long time. And you, as we were talking about it on the way over here, now this is a secret you kept for probably 70-something years, and she said it finally got the best of her. And you know, a good confession sometimes will help.
Hey, that's the business we're in. Alleviate
that. Why don't you tell us that story you kept for so long?
Well, I had went over to my mother's, and she wanted to go shopping, and I said, "I don't have a car to drive shopping, Mom." "Yes, we got a car." Said, I went to Dylan's room and I hunted, and he had hid his car keys. And Dylan had this really pretty 57 black Chevrolet car. He had it in the garage and nobody touched that car. So I said, "Mother, I don't want Dylan mad at me, and you know he'll get mad at me if I drive this car." "No, he won't. He won't know it." I said, "Well, if he finds out, you're going to be in trouble, not me." "Okay, I want to go shopping, and let's go." So she gave me the keys. I went back that car out of the garage. She got in, we went shopping, we come back home, and I said, "Okay, you just take your stuff and go on in the house, I'll put the car up." I got to the garage, I got out of that car, and I looked down to make sure I got in the same tracks that I backed up in. I pulled that car in that garage, I got out, I checked everything, there wasn't no dirt, no anything on that car. I fastened it up. I went to the house, got the hose pipe, hooked it up, and went out there to the car, and I wet the ground where the dirt, where he couldn't find no tires.
No
and
tracks.
There's no tracks. And I told Kathy that I had to tell Dylan this, that he might still get mad at me. So about 2 months ago, I confessed to Dwight that I had drove his car.
What did Brother Dylan say?
He didn't say anything. He says, "Well, I let you drove it." I said,
No, you wouldn't. He can say that now, though.
Yeah, he can let her drive it today. Yeah. But he was a young man back then. It may have been another story.
Well, yeah. Brother Dylan, did you have any idea that the car was moved
at
all?
No, I didn't.
No.
No, I had no clue whatsoever.
So where were you at during all this? You was probably out trying to make a living, weren't you?
Probably working with my dad.
Working, trying to make a living. Right. And then ladies back home wanting to just go shopping.
Yeah, but outside of the garage, my dad's garage, and we built me a shed on the side of it.
Special shed.
Right. And I had tin all the way around it, all but the front. And I kept that car in there till I left home.
Now, that's a beautiful 1957. That's a beautiful car.
It was a two-door hardtop fuel injection when I first bought it, but I blew it up. And I had to put another engine. My brother-in-law, JC, her husband, got a vet engine and fixed it up, put a big cam in it. And we just went out there on Wallstown Road, and he wound that thing up about 70 miles an hour in low gears, and a clutch stuck, and it blew up again. So we had to redo it again. I ordered a bunch of parts, and he put it back together. And that time I put a 11-inch velvet clutch in it. And it wasn't no slipping no more.
Well, it didn't slip in, did it?
The only thing I had to do every weekend after I got through running and racing, it put spider gears in the rear end. It tear them out every weekend.
Every weekend.
I was into this too. So I'd help JC work in the garage to get them, the cars ready. And they'd go down and they'd race every weekend. They'd race somebody down there. And so then one day my mother said, well, it's time to go get groceries. So we went to Warrior to get groceries. And I was driving JC's 55. And he had put a gear down in the floor of that thing. And he had a cam in it, and it was a rattling and a shaking how they do when they have a cam in them. And I drove up to the first red light in Warrior, and I had to stop. Well, this car drove up by me, and there was a race in their motor, and they had a cam in their car. And my mother looked at me, and she said, well, what in the world are they trying to say or do? I said, well, they want me to race them, Mom. No. You can't race them. And so I didn't say nothing. It kept set. When the light changed, I jerked that thing down in gear and I hit it to the next red light and stopped. And then, boys, I outrun them that time. And so they come up by me again. They wanted to race again. I said, no, I'm going to get groceries. So I just went out to get groceries.
We ain't got time for
and
that.
And my mom said, don't you race them. I'll tell JC. So that night, after we got home that evening, I put my groceries up and JC come in from work and here come Mom over there. Told JC that I was racing in Warrior. And I said, but Mama, I just drove down to the red light and stopped. And JC said, so who was it? And I said, I don't know their names, but I've heard saw them before. And he said, well, I tell you, I beat them at the racetrack the other night. Said they knew my car, and that's why they raced you.
And Sue, you beat them today.
They got them again.
And Mama just, she could not stand it because JC just died laughing.
He wasn't upset.
He's proud of me. Yeah. That's my girl right there.
Well, I thought maybe you had learned that from JC sounding like he was trying to blow the soot out of Dylan's vehicle over there. Yeah.
Now, Uncle Dylan, you used to race out here on the road, didn't you?
Yeah. Every Friday afternoon, come in. We'd come out here to Mr. Fell's store. He had a drive-in theater out here. Well, a bunch of boys would meet out there and usually go out there and somebody would want to race. And first thing we'd done was throw a spare tire out in our toolbox, get out there and kick our lake pipes caps off, open them up. Pull out there, and we'd go up there to the church road and turn, and there'd be somebody right there to flag us off. And there'd be somebody out, Miss Ellen Cowell's out there with a flashlight at night. And if anything was a-coming, they'd signal for that flashlight where it'd be, you know, to not run. But anyway, they'd give us all clear, and somebody'd flag us off, and the race is on. We'd race any and everybody. The people come from everywhere to races. They'd come from Huntsville, Warrior, come from over County Line at Mother Hills. They'd come over and they'd be evened up going down on Interstate 65 when it's just a building it, when we go over at Stuckey's. And there's a long straightaway there before you get to the river. And we'd race there, had a quarter of a mile marked off, and nobody couldn't come from the other way because the bridge was out. They were building the bridge over there because the cop couldn't come that way. And we had a nice drag strip right there in Blount County.
Now, was this before or after Tom Cowell had passed away?
It was after. No.
It's before.
Now, did he ever have anything to say to you?
No.
No, he didn't bother you at all?
No. Never did. Mr. Fells would get up in his drawer tail and watch us out the window. He couldn't stand it.
He was wanting to get out there and help, wasn't he?
But he he didn't like me to come out there and sling gravels, you know. He didn't want Barb Ruth to go with me because I was wild, too wild.
Now, okay, so we're talking about Mr. Fales now. And Brother Diddy didn't mention that was his future father-in-law, right?
Future father-in-law, that's Barb Ruth, my wife's dad, who had to drive in, but... He'd get up and in his drawer tail and watch us race out there, and he couldn't stand it because he loved it.
He said he loved it.
Mama Fale wouldn't let him come out, or is he just decided he done got too old for it?
Well, he'd just stay in there and peep out the window.
He might have thought he'd save a little bit of money if he's just stay in there. He spent too much money after racing, wouldn't he?
Right.
But it sounds like that's what you did, spent money every weekend rebuilding something.
I did, rebuilding the car and getting it ready for the next week.
And you're talking about folks coming from all over to race. It ain't like it is now to where you can put a post on the internet and get that information out quick. Mm-hmm. This had to be something that was continuous and also consistent for them to say, they're going to be racing down here. We're going to go find them this weekend.
The word would get out. That so-and-so... Gary Armstrong had a white 57 Chevrolet. It come from Daytona Beach, Florida. It was fixed up to ruin. But anyway, he had a white 57. I had a black 57. Pat Holt had a black 57. And Jackie Armstrong had a 58 Ford Interceptor. But he wasn't in our class. Massey kept trying to fix it to where he'd stay with us, but he couldn't. But then JC, my brother-in-law, he had a 55, and he had it fixed up. Anyway, I was running two Fords and a big cam, had a short skirt pistons in it. It sat there and rattled like a diesel. Mm. But when you dropped your foot off of it, she was gone. But we had some cars that trot on down the road. Like I say, they'd come from Huntsville, Warrior, Trafford, County Line, all over that way. It thought they had fast cars, but we'd put them in shade.
And every weekend, somebody blow up one, and they'd bring it to the house and put it in the little shed. And
go to working.
JC had this big old pot of stuff that he washed them in, and so he'd lay the parts out and said, "Now, Sue, you wash them and have them ready to go when I come home from work, where I can put them in the car,
have them cleaned up."
And so I'd always do that, and he'd go down there and sit in the garage or fix them up every week that somebody had one blowed up.
Hate to say it, we outrun the highway patrol.
Mm-hmm. Well, you ain't got to hate to say it. I mean, they probably ain't around to hear it anymore. So.
But there's no good. Up our Cleveland, I outrun them from there to Hayden. And
they weren't used to that.
No.
They didn't know.
And we had a place up there at Cleveland. It's called Shamrock. From Shamrock, well, it's Texaco, not Texaco, but it's Sidco up there now. Right above it is a little cafe called Shamrock. And we had a place marked off at Shamrock all the way down to where the road to go over to the river. There's a service station on each side, and it's K-Row. K-Row on one side and K-Row on the other side, and they had big old tall towers with circles around, kind of like a peppermint candy stick. But anyway, that was our 40-mile mark. And then boys from Bluntsville, some of them was big Alabama football players. Their dad was real, had a lot of money, the doctors up there. And then they had them roadsters and stuff, and of course, on a roll-off, the roadsters beat me, but if a dead stop, I could take them. But we had a place up there. We'd done a lot of racing, too, but good thing we didn't get caught. I mean, it wasn't all that much traffic sometimes. We'd get up there at Cleveland, Donnyana, I mean, be Jackie Armstrong, Pat Holt, myself, and a bunch more. Spooky Dutton had a 57 Chevrolet. We start up there at round the clock, And we'd come all the way from Onayana to Sugar Creek, most of the time with the lights off. Running across Rubsey Stretch from Onayana without any lights.
Goodness gracious.
And we'd have them pegged out. We'd have
racing the whole way.
Huh?
Racing the whole way.
Really? We'd have the peg out. It'd be 120 just as long as it'd be registered. It'd pay pegged
solid
out.
Solid registered. We don't
have. I mean, race all the way to Sugar Creek. It's a wonder we hadn't got killed, but we didn't. Nobody got wrecked. Nobody got hurt.
Well, you didn't have to worry about the roundabout at that time, though, Brother Dylan. You just keep on going. Right,
right.
Roundabout to slow you down nowadays.
Would you have somebody riding with you, or would y'all be solo in the cars?
Well, it'd be sometime maybe one with you, but most of the time solo.
Well, we've talked about racing, and that's another time and another place. So much fun. It's hard to wrap my brain around it.
Can't do it no more.
But I loved hearing about it. Well, before we tie everything up tonight, there's some old stories that Papa's used to tell me and that y'all live that I just want to get. But as we're closing, you've got one. I know Uncle Dylan's got one. So, Mama, tell us one of those old ones.
Well, we was over at Mama Love's, and her brothers, one of them was a monkey. But he was pulling pranks on everybody. Every time somebody, and he was a funny person. And we was all sitting around the fire. So my aunt was a scaredy cat. So her and my other aunt slept together. So every night she'd go and look under her bed. Well, my uncle come in there and told everybody, said, I'm going to put me an old black coat on and cover my head, and I'm going to get under that bed. So we all kept talking and laughing and by the fireplace. And so she come through and she said, well, I think I'm going to bed. I'm getting sleepy. And my other aunt said, well, I'm not going to bed right now. She said, well, okay, I want to borrow this lamp just for a little bit and go to my room and back. So she carried the lamp. She set it down on the table, and she got down on her knees to look under the bed, and my uncle was under there, and she come out screaming like something was after, and everybody started laughing. Said, what's wrong? And she said, there's somebody under my bed. Y'all got to get him out. Get him out. And so Daddy said, oh, that's just your brother. And she said, that's not my brother. And Daddy said, yes, it is. So my uncle come crawling out and just dying of laughing. And my aunt was so mad she was going to beat him up. And so my uncle said, he held her and he just kept laughing at her. And she just started to bawling. And she said, well, I'm going to bed. And she went and got in the bed, and we didn't hear anything else out of her that night.
Lucky she didn't have a heart attack.
You got that right.
Looking under that bed every night.
Luckily she didn't burn the house down. She's liable to throw that oil lamp underneath.
Kerosene, boy.
One time in school, my dad and them were studying about animals going in buildings when it come up a bad lightning cloud. Mr. Faulkner said, I don't believe people just got animals, horses and stuff nowadays that go in a building other than a barn to get out of the weather. My dad said, I got one to go in. They said, oh, no, I don't believe it. So next day, my dad just went out there and got his old mule out of the barn. He's still going to school, still at home. And he rode the old mule to school, and he went down there and he got off the old mule there in front of the doorsteps. This is a Dover school that's still standing down there now. He got off and went up there and propped the doors back and went, got off the old mule and led him up the steps, and on in the hall he went. Down the hall he went. They used to keep the floors oiled with the tongued and grooved flooring, but they kept it oiled to keep the dust down. And that old mule had shoes on, and down the hall my dad went with him, and he got down there to the corner to turn to the right, and those shoes wouldn't dig into the floor, and that oil He just plowed into the wall, old mule did. Well, he went on down through there to the right. Before he go down in the basement, Dad turned around, and this old mule started pooping. He pooped way back up through there, piece, and on out to went. My dad just got on the old mule in the house. He come, because he just showed him his mule would go in the school, in the building. So the next day, my dad had to go up and see Mr. Russell. He is a little mayor up above the railroad. His name was Russell. I forget his name now. But anyway, they told my dad, said, we're going to have to fine you for messing up the school. Dad said, Mr. Farmer said he didn't believe a mule would go in a school in the building. He said it ain't a coming a cloud, but the mule still went in there. He said, we're going to have to fine you. You're going to have to pay us $5 for the fee. My dad said, I want a receipt. If you're going to charge me $5, and my dad said, I'm going to have to go get the money somewhere. So I don't know where my dad borrowed the money, but he borrowed $5 to pay the fine. Well, about a week and a half later, they wanted my dad's receipt. And they said, nope, you ain't getting my receipt. And they was going to send him off to prison for messing up the school and damaging the school and destroying school property, and, you know, it public property in its school, you know. But he wouldn't give him a receipt, so he got out of that. But he did ride the mule in the schoolhouse.
I believe, I've never once doubted knowing that man that he did it.
I know.
You weren't going to tell him he wasn't going to do something. Because he'd
do
it.
And he was determined.
Oh, absolutely.
And he was strong. He was a strong man.
So he kept the receipt from the bet.
Right.
So they wrote it down. I bet you can't. He said, I bet I can.
See, Mr. Faulkner bet him, and his mother went down and talked to Mr. Russell and said, my son is underage. He couldn't be betting him that.
It was a mess.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is,
Daddy kept
that bet.
He'd have won it.
He did win it.
Or he did win it, mm-hmm. but he did it with the school principal.
Right.
So there's a whole mess. Like
it's a mess.
The principal shouldn't have bet him.
It's Blount County, Hayden, Alabama at its finest.
But it was an official bet. Like
yes.
It wasn't just.
Yes.
My dad said in the book, science book, though, two horses had their neck crossed, a white one and a black one. Mm-hmm. And there's it studying them, and they're talking about animals going in shelter in a bad storm, you know, and that's when the bet come up.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had a lot of fun today. Reliving some old memories, boy, good times, starting with Christmas and coming back. And I'm going to bring it back full circle real quick. Since this will be the Christmas episode, it probably should be coming out on Christmas Eve night. So I'm going to read a little bit of the Christmas story.
Go ahead.
And then we're going to tie it all up and tell everybody Merry Christmas. So in the book of Matthew, starting at verse 18 in the first chapter, it says, this is how Jesus the Messiah was born. His mother, Mary, was engaged to be married to Joseph, but before the marriage took place, while she was still a virgin, she became pregnant through the power of the Holy Spirit. Joseph, her fiancé, was a good man and did not want to disgrace her publicly, so he decided to break the engagement quietly. As he considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, Joseph, son of David, the angel said, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child within her was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and she will have a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. All of this occurred to fulfill the Lord's message through his prophet. Look, the virgin will conceive a child, she will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded and took Mary as his wife, but he did not have relations with her until her son was born, and Joseph named him Jesus. And so Jesus did indeed save the world from their sins, and through what the Bible tells us, is as long as we believe and confess him as Lord, that we will be forgiven. And so that's how we still do it today. And that's what we celebrate at Christmas, the virgin birth of Jesus Christ, who went on to be our sinless sacrifice.
Although all these things have changed over the years, that remains the same.
That remains the same.
And it will until he comes back and gets us.
That's right. Right. Well, my mom, Uncle Dylan, I can't thank you enough for coming on and being part of the show today. It's been a blessing to me getting to hear all kinds of stories, and I hope Shane's had a good time too. I think he has.
I learned some stuff. I didn't know Brother Dylan was old race car driver. I never knew that.
Dylan Hot Rod Hayes, baby. Well, that's going to do it today at the Hayden, Alabama podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Dylan.
I'm Sue.
So Merry Christmas from all of us to all of you. We'll see you next week.